Good morning and welcome to Beyond Infinity. Piers Cunningham and John Young in the studio with you through till 12 o'clock, and it's followed by the news. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Piers.
We have an interesting story, an interesting selection of stories to go through in this hour of the program, including, well, LastPass is a way that you can protect your passwords, and it's John Young knows a lot more about this than I do. And in fact, you've got some tutorials and things on
YouTube.
Yeah,
created a course on how to use it for sure.
So it's an interesting one. Anyway, it's been solved. It's been swallowed up by another company called
LogMeIn.
LogMeIn.
Yep.
And they've paid about $150 million to purchase LastPass. They are saying that there won't be too many changes. So we'll tell you a bit more about that takeover of LastPass.
I am concerned, I must say.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. These things can happen when things get taken over. Things inevitably can change. Different business cultures and so on. The Reserve Bank of Australia had some very interesting comments about the use of cryptocurrencies, in particular Bitcoin, and quite a benign approach taken by the RBA. So we'll tell you a bit more about that. And also a genetic... Would you ever buy a genetically modified micro pig to have as a pet? Because they say that pigs are as smart as dogs. And anyway, they have genetically created a modified baby pig that doesn't get too big, stays within about 31 to 44 pounds.
Was this like a teacup pig or something, is it?
It's a bit bigger than that. It's more like a sort of a cat. But they say that pigs are about the same sort of intelligence as dogs. So instead of getting a dog, you might get a pig. So we'll tell you a bit more about that and perhaps some of the resistance around the world that might apply to having a genetically modified pig as a pet. And John, you've got a few interesting stories as well.
Well, today is Data Retention Day. So government initiative is kicked off. So we'll talk about what that means for you and your devices and the stories that's happening there. There's been there's an update that's coming with Tesla, which is an exciting update.
Right.
That is some autopilot, basically allowing you the car to drive by itself. So this is an exciting move. And Volvo are also looking to do this. So we've got a bit of information about what that means, maybe for insurance purposes as well.
Okay.
You don't want, a driverless vehicle being involved in an accident. So how do you combat that?
And while on the subject of cars, I should mention we've got a website if you want to check whether your Volkswagen is affected by the recall. There's a website you can go to where you can actually put in the vehicle identification number on your car, and it'll tell you whether you're affected or not. So I'll tell you about that.
And actually, I must say, because last week we were on air and talking about that, I said that our car is one of those. Got home, saw that there was that website check, put the VIN number in, and we were 1 year okay. So our model, the previous year, was fine.
Okay.
It happened to be from the following year's model.
Right.
So ours is fine, which is good, but unfortunately there's a lot of people
And I think
there.
Late model TDI, if you bought one in the last year or 18 months, say Golf TDI, they're not affected either. I was surprised. I actually thought it went right up to the current spec'd cars, but apparently not according to this website, which we'll tell you about later in the program. What else have you got?
Look, there's a few other stories. We've got a hacker who is actually making a bit of a Robin Hood story where he's actually making routers more secure. We've got just a couple of basic updates on some apps as well. So
Sounds interesting. And also, we should also, you sent me an email about Edward Snowden, the whistleblower from the NSA who's holed up in Russia. They're going to charge him if he goes back to America, so he's pretty much tied down there. But he released a lot of documents about mass surveillance, the NSA, hacking into undersea phone, fiber optic cables and all sorts of things, satellites. Lights the works. He's come out with some additional information about how mobile phones can be hacked.
Yes.
So that'll be an interesting one just to throw in there with the data retention story. So hopefully you can stay with us. It's going to be an interesting program going right through till 12 o'clock with Beyond Infinity on Radio Port Phillip, 98.7, 98.3 FM. It's about 13 minutes after 11. Let's take a quick track break and play some sponsors information. We'll be back with the program very shortly. Hopefully you can stay with us. Welcome back to Beyond Infinity, about 20 minutes after 11 on this Tuesday, the 13th of October. Now, we do 5 quiz questions every week, and we give you the answers a bit later in the program. John, what are they?
Question one is, which planet did Sir William Herschel discover? And the second question is, MS is an abbreviation for which medical condition? The third question is, name two of the three mammals known as cetaceans. Question four is, what is potash? And question five is, what is the ephemeral river?
Okay, interesting questions. We'll give you the answers a bit later in the program. Now, just while we're on the subject of Bitcoin, the RBA's been making some interesting...
We haven't got the price yet, have we?
Oh, beg your pardon. Yeah, the price of Bitcoin. One Bitcoin will cost you $334.27 Australian. Mm-hmm. And if you were buying it in euros, 216 euros, and in US dollars, $245.45. So reasonably stable on the price of the...
And the Winklevoss twins have actually just announced a new thing in over in the US where they've got a new exchange which has come up with Bitcoin. So they've been working on this for some time. Yeah.
I think they're quite heavy backers of it.
Yeah.
And those twins were the guys who were originally involved with Facebook. I think they managed to.
They got something.
They winkled a $60 million payout, I think, out of Mark Zuckerberg and his crew, mm-hmm. In the early days of Facebook. What a pity they hadn't managed to hang in there.
Yeah, keep the stock or something.
Yeah, because it'd be worth a fair bit more now, you'd reckon. So, the Reserve Bank of Australia's been looking into the Senate's been making an inquiry via the Senate Economics Committee into, you know, the effects and the influence of cryptocurrencies, and the sort of most prominent of them, I guess, is Bitcoin, on the Australian economy and the Australian financial system. And basically what they've said is that there is basically no discernible impact on competition or risk to the financial system, and that digital currencies represent a potentially important development, as in a positive development. Mm-hmm. The RBA's opening statement to this inquiry at the Senate said that digital currencies represent an interesting development in the payments and financial system landscape. The concept of a decentralized ledger is an innovation with potentially broad applications for a modern economy. The bank's judgment is that the current very limited use of digital currencies means that they do not raise any significant concerns with respect to competition, efficiency, or risk to the financial system. Accordingly, it is currently unlikely that any benefits of regulation would outweigh the potential costs. So that's the attitude of the RBA, which is reasonably positive, actually. I mean,
they're acknowledging it's there.
The bottom line is that it's so marginal in use. It's such a minor part of the overall financial system that it's not something that they even need to bother to spend money in trying to regulate.
But we are pretty behind the times here in Australia. I mean, we're with some of the tech stuff, you know, we're behind America by a year or two. And Bitcoin is still a young and emerging technology. So I think it's still some time before we'll really see strong adoption. It's the techies that are using it at the moment to maybe purchase things online. They're transferring their Australian dollars into Bitcoin. That means they can purchase in the global market without having to, you know, keep switching between currencies. It's just that one currency they're using.
One of the things that also came out of this inquiry at the Senate is that Jonathan Miller, who's co-founder of Bitcoin trading platform BitTrade Australia, he actually replied at the Senate inquiry stating that the double taxation hitting Bitcoin trades in Australia, where a 10% goods and services GST is applied to Bitcoin transactions, forces Australian Bitcoin users to go offshore. Mm-hmm. So you're better off to buy your Bitcoin overseas at the moment than through a local exchange.
Maybe buy US dollars and then use your US dollars to purchase
Which
Bitcoin
is a convoluted way of doing it. And you're going to lose on that exchange to US anyway. There's going to be some kind of fee involved or loss in that. And then you've got to buy from that in too. But I guess the real point is that, you know, Australian companies, entrepreneurs and the like that want to that take advantage of this cryptocurrency and get it going on a sort of a local basis, they're being penalised with this 10% GST that applies. It's like you're purchasing a good buying Bitcoin.
Yep.
So that's not really appropriate when you think about, you know, like you don't pay 10% if you want to buy a foreign currency, you know, some US dollars, for example. You don't pay GST on the purchase.
You pay the exchange rate.
You pay a fee to the bank that does the transaction for you.
Yep.
But you don't actually pay because you haven't actually, I mean, you've purchased a means to purchase. You haven't actually purchased
money. Yeah.
So that was one of the things that was raised in this Senate inquiry, and we'll keep you up to date on that. But overall, you know, you'd have to say that particularly comments like the concept of a decentralized ledger is an innovation with potentially broad applications for a modern economy. That's quite encouraging stuff from the RBA.
Yeah.
So at least they're not sort of knocking it on the head. They're not just saying, oh, this is going to be used by drug dealers and money launderers.
But look, it's also a bit of a chicken and egg story at the moment. Do you have it where there's the people that have the Bitcoins but can't use it, can't spend it anywhere? Or do you have the stores which are offering for payment in Bitcoin but don't have have anyone that has the money to actually spend it. So there needs to be some balance on both sides. And I think business would be happy to walk into it and happy to accept it if there was more clarity around it and if there wasn't this extra 10% GST that's coming from it.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Look, it would be good to see maybe some more regulation around it, but maybe it is too young, as they're saying, and maybe it is sort of too small to be looking at that.
I think that's the bottom line. Yeah. And I think also that the cost of them getting involved and looking at ways to regulate it is obviously going to cost them as an institution a decent amount of money just to even, you know, look at regulating. And they're sort of saying at the moment the benefits of doing that there's no cost benefit in it, basically, for them. So at the moment they're not getting involved too heavily.
We'd like to hear from any of the listeners that are actually using Bitcoin at the moment. Maybe you're a company or a business that actually accepts Bitcoin, so you can tweet me at Digital Young on Twitter and just, you know, send me a link to your site. We'd be interested to see if you're an Australian company that's using Bitcoin. That'd be great.
Okay, cool, excellent. Now just before we take a quick break and come back with some very interesting stories in the second half of the program, I just thought I'd mention that the Beijing Genomics Institute has developed a genetically modified pig which could be exported around the world as a pet, and they're certainly planning on using it as a pet in the state in China. It weighs in at a modest 31 to 44 pounds. So in other words, you know, if you've ever wanted to have a pig as a pet, and pigs are apparently quite intelligent, sort of nice animals to have around, if you don't mind having a big animal that is pretty dirty and has fairly sort of nasty eating habits, if you don't mind having one of those in your house, then you don't need a genetically modified one. But if you want one that sort of stays compact, a bit like a cat or a dog, you know, choosing to buy a smaller breed, then you might be interested in this genetically modified pig. They're known as micro pigs, and they're expected to live about 15 to 20 years, which is kind of your age of a dog, roughly. They were originally developed for research purposes, and then they realized that they had a good outcome, and that there was no reason why they couldn't use these as pets. And pigs are pretty popular in China, so they see that there's a market there. This is the Beijing Genomics Institute. But as far as exporting to the rest of the world, there are certain things that are going to go against that. People are a bit jittery about importing pets in the first place, let alone ones that have been altered genetically.
Yep.
And there'll also be some cultural hurdles to get across. A lot of people are opposed to genetically modified animals in any form. And there's also the question of whether, you know, legislators and countries want to actually allow pigs to be used as pets.
Yes.
You know, do you really want that?
What's wrong with a dog? I have a dog and a cat, and they're great pets. I don't need a pig.
I think they're quite cute. I mean, I just think it's slightly weird that you've got a genetically modified pig.
Yeah.
But it stops it growing up into a big, really big animal that you've got to do something with. So it could be the beginning of a new craze or wave of genetically modified pets around the world. You can already have, I believe, if you go to certain companies over in Korea, maybe North Korea, you can actually, if you've got a family dog that you really, really love, you can have it cloned before it dies.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can wind up with an exact copy.
Wow.
It costs you a lot. I think it's about $20,000. And whether you're actually allowed to import that animal back to the country, you know, for, say from Australia, is a very...
We saw the furor with Johnny Depp's dogs when he was over here filming for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right. And they weren't even genetically modified.
No, they were just regular dogs.
Yeah, he just didn't declare them.
Yeah.
Just brought them in on his plane. You wonder about the effect on normal pig gene stocks. You know, for example, if one of these genetically modified pigs was able to breed with an un-genetically modified pig in Australia, for example, what that would do. There's lots of controversy about genetically modified agricultural crops, you know, because they've inevitably spread into neighbouring fields and stuff. So the idea of containing a genetically modified strain doesn't seem to work in nature.
That's
you wind up having interbreeding, and then the sort of natural genes are tainted by these artificial ones, and that can have all sorts of effects. The other thing is, I mean, God forbid, but if you decided to eat your pet pig, would there be any health effects from eating a genetically modified pig as well? So anyway, for a variety of reasons, both cultural and
moral
sort of biohazard and all the rest of it, it's possibly unlikely that that these genetically modified micro pigs are going to make it to Australia or anywhere else for that matter. But
we'll keep an eye on it.
They could be popular in China. All right, so let's take a quick break now. It's 11:30. You're listening to Beyond Infinity on Radio Port Phillip. We'll be back very shortly. Let's take another track, and this one's a bit of Crowded House. I hope you enjoyed that track from Crowded House, Light from a Distant Sun. And before that, we had Kate Bush, Rubber Band Man. Now, John, we've got some interesting stuff. Well, shall we start with the day that it is today? And it's kind of a bit creepy. We had plenty of warning about it. We've talked about it on this program in the past. But today is Data Retention Day.
It is. It's kind of a scary day, I guess. It's a little bit of the unknown. What we do know is that there is the government, the Australian government, has passed the legislation. This happened some time ago, which said to ISPs, you must retain the metadata of every single Australian user. So
for 2 years.
Yeah. So if you're in Australia and you're using some kind of digital device, a mobile phone, a tablet, a laptop, a home PC, anything like that, which can connect to the internet, then all of your activity will now be stored by the ISP. An ISP being internet service provider, for example, Telstra or Optus, something like that. So, look, there's been some concern in terms of, well, what is metadata and how much will be retained? Exactly how will this be implemented? And I think even though today is the day, there is still some concern about what all this means.
And we've talked about this. We've actually got some podcasts that are posted on our iTunes podcast list. If you want to do a search on iTunes for Beyond Infinity, you'll find them. And we've got some curated, edited podcasts where we've discussed this in the past. And I plan to actually update that with this story of Data Retention Day today, because it's all sort of come to fruition. But one of the things that was raised then was, well, I mean, various things, but how does all this data get stored? Mm-hmm. Who pays for the cost of doing this? Yep. You know, that the ISPs have got to collect the data. Are they going to be charging? Are they going to be upping the price for their consumers to cover their own costs?
But if the government subsidizes it, then we're still paying for it through our taxes.
Exactly, absolutely, or services that are cut elsewhere.
Yep.
And what are the benefits of it? And as you mentioned before, what does metadata mean?
Yep.
Does that just include, say, for example, metadata theoretically is if you're on a Mac and you go get info, or if you go on a Windows system, you go properties. It tells you things like the name of the file extension,
yep.
the date it was created,
yep.
the number of megabytes consumed by the file, that sort of stuff. But doesn't actually give you the content of the file such. It's sort of the metadata. It's the basic information about
the Attorney General George Brandis, I think, tried to explain it. He was talking about the envelope and how it's sort of the basic information. But really, there's just too much information that goes on. When you go to a website, then just because the domain name at the top is one address, that doesn't mean that there's not content coming from other sites. So the content on the page, if you see an ad or a video or some other content in there, there's potential that is coming from a different site. So does the metadata capture all that information, or is it just capturing where you are, who you are, and the domain address that you went to? So
and the time and the date.
It's not really giving. If they go with just that basic information, well, it's kind of useless. What are they going to use it for? But if they go too much, well, then that is imposing on, I think, people's privacy. They're looking at every single activity you do online, which is a little bit concerning, because what we know is that it's easy to get around this. And if you use a VPN, which is a virtual private network, there's also a browser called Tor, which allows you to be private online. But there are a number of ways that anybody that wants to circumnavigate this system can easily do it. And it only takes a few minutes to research how to do it. So all of a sudden, we've got the people that they say they're targeting, that those that are potentially terrorists or doing things to harm others, those they want to target now know how to skirt the system through some basic research online. So everybody else now has all their data retained, and for what purpose? Now, what we do know and what the rumblings have been recently is that with the TPP having been signed, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, business and governments are working on this. Governments from all around the world have been working on this document to try and sort of open up trade amongst the world. And because business is part of it, I think they're trying to protect their IP, their intellectual property. So if the data is being retained, and then let's say there's, we've got the Dallas Pies Club, for example, the case over here in Australia, but it's a production company from the US. What if they asked for access to this metadata and wanted to know who went to, you know,
so how do you, protect commercial interests?
That's right. Yep. So, look, there's a lot of questions about not only who's going to access this data, but also the security of the data, because if it's then stolen by hackers, because it's, let's admit it, like it's hacking is happening on a regular basis. Mm. We're hearing of big news stories, Ashley Madison, for example, and we've got big stories happening all the time. So how secure is our data? How do we trust these ISPs? Because it's not just one ISP and the government regulating that one, it's all ISPs. So any one of those could fall victim to a hack attack and all of a sudden everyone's data is then vulnerable.
And exactly. And just interestingly, in a similar vein, Edward Snowden, who's the whistleblower from, he was involved with WikiLeaks and he released a lot of NSA information about mass surveillance involving the so-called Five Eyes, so the intelligence agencies of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the US and Britain, and basically saying that he's recently come out and said that he doesn't own an iPhone because he believes that iPhones, that there's software where an innocuous text message can be sent to an iPhone and that can wrest control in an undetectable way. Apparently you can put your phone in to get serviced because you've maybe noticed it's not behaving completely normally, and it won't get picked up at the service place as well. So
this is also the case with Android phones as well. So it's not just an iPhone. I mean, I'm a huge Android fan user, but there is the case of a text message being sent to Android phones and having that sort of backdoor open where people can gain access to your microphone, video, access files, download, and from your device.
Yep. So it's a interesting development on Metadata Retention Day, as it's been nicknamed in Australia, that new law that's taken effect. We'll keep you up to date on that. And as I mentioned, there is a podcast on our iTunes page where we go into that. We did that a while ago when it was all being debated and when it was before
Parliament. I think it was passed into legislation. We did a bit of the follow-up from that. So I heard about that time. But look, my thinking is at this stage, there's going to be a lot of concern in terms of how it's stored, what exactly is stored. There is concern about how much data will be stored, because I think the ISPs are still, from what I've seen online, a little bit concerned about, well, exactly what do we need? So they'll probably take too much. They'll have all this data. And then I think we'll find out in maybe a few months or maybe in 12 months down the track that it's no benefit. It's not going to have stopped any crime. It might be good for looking at the past. It might be good for some potential investigations. But other countries that have adopted this kind of scheme have abandoned it as well. So I think potentially we'll go down that path as well. We'll test it, won't work, and then we'll abandon it.
And the thing is that they'll never be able to explain to us how or if it did work, because the very nature of the organisations that are gathering it and have access to this metadata, which is spy organisations and sort of government security organisations, they're in a position where they're not able to divulge. So they're not really – they're going to be – it will be difficult for them to justify doing this, because they'll never be able to give you a true example of how it was effective. Yep. I mean, they can just say, yes, it's been effective. We've prevented things from happening, but we're not going to tell you what they are, and we're not going to tell you how it was effective.
I think this was the case with the Senate inquiries before all this came into law. It was that the question was asked, well, in other countries where this has been used, how many crimes have been prevented? And I don't think they could bring up a single case, but it might have been the case where crimes were prevented, or at least people were discovered, but they can't divulge that information.
That's right. Yeah. So it's going to be a tough one to sell because of that. All right. Now, moving on, Tesla's released some new software.
On October 15th, Thursday, we're expecting version 7.0, which is the latest version for Tesla. So this is the electric vehicles.
High-performance electric cars.
Yeah.
Incredible acceleration times. Amazing. You sent me a video
that's great.
Of the latest Commodore sort of muscle car with a big V8, 6-litre V8 engine against a, I don't know, whatever it is. It's an electric engine.
Yeah. It's the Model S.
Model S. And it just blew it away. Because it's instant power on tap.
Right.
Like that thing's getting its full, whatever it is, 300 kilowatts of power, like straight away.
Electric motors, it's just,
there's no winding up the revs to get to the power band. Yep. It's just on.
And they were just off, and there was no chance. A V8 supercar couldn't even catch up with it. Now, given enough time, probably could, but, off the mark, that was, so fast, so quick. It was so
incredible.
Yep. So, yeah, this Thursday, it's been announced that they're going to release software which includes autopilot mode, which is not unexpected, but it's interesting to see that this is now happening. And I guess so that the features will include auto steering and lane change activated by the turn signal and auto parking in parallel spaces.
Pretty cool, isn't it? So you hit your indicator to go, say, to make a lane change on a highway.
Yeah.
And you just hit the indicator. You just take your hands off the wheel and let it do it.
Let it happen, and it will work. And
so it's obviously got a forward-facing radar, which you can get in other cars.
Yep.
Volkswagen, for example, have got it, and they use it for accident prevention.
Yep.
So apparently, just anecdotally, I've heard that if that thing detects you're too close to a car in front of you,
put the brakes
on it can be really, really sudden, though. It can be sort of neck-destroyingly sudden. Yeah. But
I think there needs to be some caution about how this would use. And I'm assuming, they're smart enough, when they can build this kind of thing, they're smart enough to work out how to operate it. But my concerns would be, what happens if you get out of the driver's seat? And I did see a YouTube video of some idiot decided to put on an autopilot mode and moved across to the passenger seat and was driving along 100 kilometres an hour or 60 mile an hour over in the US, I think it was. And he wasn't in the driver's seat, and the car was driving fine. But the worry is, well, if you haven't got that manual override, then you've got a huge potential for a major problem. So I would like to hopefully see where there's some kind of pressure sensor where you have to be in the driver's seat, otherwise it slows down or stops, it pulls over, or something else, prevents you from continuing on. But, what if there is an accident? And the story out of Volvo is that because they're looking at driverless cars as well. Mm. So, this is the way of the future. We're going to have driverless cars. Mm. Whether it happens in a couple of years or 10 years or 20 years, they will be here.
Mm.
And Volvo has said that they will be responsible for any accidents caused by their driverless cars, which is a huge statement to make.
So they're going to offer insurance.
They're going to offer the insurance. Well, I think they're concerned because they're so confident in the software and they must be doing all this testing and they're confident it's going to work, but that there may be a lack of confidence from the insurance companies or from, maybe dealers or whoever in the countries they want to send these vehicles to. So they're saying, well, hey, we'll happily support this and therefore provide the insurance on the car. Now, there's probably some caveats around that. Obviously, you'd have to be using it in autopilot mode and tick a number of boxes. But this is a good sign. I mean, you've got the manufacturer actually supporting their technology so that we can get these autonomous vehicles. Because otherwise, we can see that the government would maybe be saying, well, how do we do this and who's going to back it? And we've got the manufacturer.
I mean, you'd reckon that the whole thing's going to have to go a long way before someone's going to agree to put their family and themselves in a car and in chaotic, central Melbourne or Sydney or any big city around the world, and just take your hands off the wheel and just rely on technology to keep you safe. Are you going to be happy going through an intersection with trucks passing you at 80 kilometres an hour and stuff? Just that real seat of the pants, hair on the back of the neck. Are you prepared to just put your faith in this thing? Because cars are pretty, it's just seconds that separate you from safety and disaster.
Yeah.
So the whole thing's got to work perfectly. There's no grey area. Works 100% or it doesn't.
There are some estimates saying that 90% of car accidents could be reduced by autonomous driverless vehicles.
Yeah.
But there's that scare factor of, me personally, I want to get in the car and be in control of the vehicle because I trust me.
Exactly. And there'll be people who you'll never be able to impose it because people will want to be able to drive. And probably when you go out in the country road and you're away from the network and maybe the network will extend by satellite or whatever. It'll go everywhere. It'll be global by that stage. But there will be situations where you'll want to have control of your car. And
there'll be a hybrid, I'm sure.
I mean, it raises all sorts of possibilities. I mean, for example, if you lose your license for drink driving, are you going to be allowed to have a driverless car then? If you're not driving, I mean, it's like having a taxi. You'll pay for the service too, so there'll be some cost involved. It'll be more expensive. It'd have to be.
But I would think that's where they're talking about where these reductions in accidents will occur, because if we have someone that is choosing to drink and drive and then they cause an accident, well, a driverless vehicle could allow them to get home. But I would be confident in saying that the government is going to bring in legislation at some stage to say that you're still technically in control of the car because you can turn it on or off. Even if it is driverless, then you have to be still under 0.05 for that manual override. So I think we'll still see some kind of hybrid model. yes, they'll be here, but we'll have some kind of control. Hopefully that's where we can actually still steer it and take on control. But anyway,
interesting stuff. All right. Now, just a bit of a follow-up story quickly before we take a break. We were talking about Volkswagen and the scandal and the emissions and all the vehicles that have been affected. There is a website that's been set up by Volkswagen relating to Australian products. It's VolkswagenDieselInfo.com.au. Volkswagen, that's E-N, dieselinfo.com.au, and you can basically put in the vehicle identification number from your car. Usually it's visible through the bottom of the windshield or on the engine, and you put that VIN number in and it'll actually tell you whether your car is affected. One thing that is clearly stated there is that it's only diesel models that are affected.
Mm-hmm.
The range of models is the earliest ones are 2008, and the most recent ones are 2015.
Yep.
So worth having a look through just to see if you're affected by that. It's a voluntary recall at this stage, and there are some commercial vehicles also affected with diesel engines. Let's take a quick track and be back with more Beyond Infinity very shortly. Welcome back to Beyond Infinity. About 4 minutes remaining until the news at the top of the hour, so hopefully you can stay tuned to Radio Port Phillip 98.7 or 98.3 on the FM band. John, a couple of interesting things. First of all, the quiz question, or the answers.
The answers, yeah. So which planet did William Herschel discover? Well, that was Uranus.
Yep.
MS is an abbreviation for multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
Whales, dolphins, and porpoises are all cetaceans. Mm-hmm. Potash is another name for potassium salts.
Mm-hmm.
And ephemeral rivers only flow for a short time after rain or snow melt. There you go.
Okay, fair enough. There you go. Hopefully you did well with those. Now, look, we've just got a couple of quick stories before the news. So,
are you a fan of a bit of movies, old school movies? In particular, one of my favourites, a trilogy actually, but it's Back to the Future. So that is Back to the Future 1, I think it was 1985 it was released. Back to the Future 2 was released in 1989. And during that movie, there was they went into the future. So that was Marty, Doc, and Jennifer. They got into the DeLorean.
Yep.
And they travelled into the future, and they went to October 21st, 2015. So that's next week. We've got Wednesday of next week, where we expect them to roll on in the DeLorean. So, look, a pretty exciting day. Look, big for movie fans. So there's a big following at the moment. There's Facebook pages dedicated to it, where there's 40,000 likes and followers that are keeping up to date with this. What have we seen as a result? So, you know, from the movie, there were a lot of predictions.
It's a bit of a time capsule, isn't it, to kind of compare what they thought was going to happen in the movie and what actually happened.
I've heard...
Hoverboards.
Yeah, not here.
Didn't work.
The lace-free or the lace-up shoes. There was a jacket that he put on, which was auto-drying. He'd fallen in the water and they pressed the button and it just auto-dried. people wearing their pants with their pockets on the outside of the pants, so they pull them out. That was the fashion, apparently.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we should start walking around like that.
Okay, cool.
And one thing that was quite interesting was they've recently said they could never have predicted the smartphones of today. And part of the movie includes having a fax on a wall or in multiple, you know, places of the house. So it's just, look, it's interesting. It was fun. Still waiting for the hoverboard. But yeah, October 21st, 2015 happens next week, which is Back to the Future Day.
All right. Interesting stuff. And a bit of a disturbing hacking story, just to wind things up on.
Well, I don't know if it's disturbing or not. It's more of a Robin Hood type story, really. Mm-hmm. Look, hacking is something that we're hearing, as I said, on a regular basis. But when is hacking, how do you define bad or good hacking? And this potentially is a good hack story. So somebody has hacked 10,000 routers to actually make them more secure. So this is where...
Okay, so he's exposing vulnerabilities so that hardware makers can make them more secure in future.
Someone, he hasn't sort of claimed who he is at this stage, but he's hacking thousands of unprotected Wi-Fi routers everywhere and apparently forcing the owners to make them more secure. So usually there's a default password. When you get your router and you set it up, that would be where it might be ABC123 or 1234, and that is very unprotected. So... This hacker, is actually sending out hacking into these systems, providing a backdoor into it, and basically he's making it so that they have to change the default password. If he notices that the default password is weak, then he's actually making it that they have to update it, and he's also closing up potential ports or backdoors, other areas where other hackers, people that are in for you know, taking information would actually you know, be blocked out from that. So look, it's a
community service.
A good news hacking story, yeah.
Okay.
But we don't know if he's keeping that back door open for other nefarious purposes.
And if you want to read more about that, you can go to thehackernews.com. All right, we are just about out of time, but stand by for the news. I hope you enjoyed the program. We'll be back next Tuesday from 11 o'clock with another edition of Beyond Infinity. Don't forget about our iTunes podcast. Just do a search on under podcasts. If you've got the app on your iPhone, that's an easy way to subscribe to it, and you'll get a curated sample of kind of the best stories and our favorite stories from the program over the last few years. We'll catch you next week. Have a good one.